Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading again from the book A Field by Sumner Madison. And again, we'll be traveling into the backwoods and marshes of Wisconsin with Eric Epstein. And he writes, "Sometimes what you think you might see, or hope you might see but don't, happens when there's a disruption caused by our presence on the landscape. It's almost as if there's a palpable interference that keeps you from connecting in some meaningful way. I've had a couple of things happen, one of which I attribute to hypothermia. One June morning, when the air temperature was less than 40 degrees, ornithologist and friend Joan Elias and I threw a canoe into the Bad River. We were going to do breeding bird surveys in two separate areas north of Highway 2. And the way we decided to cover the most ground was for her to drop me off, then I would follow a compass line through the vast wetlands and hopefully meet her hours later at a prearranged spot on a topographic map. She would go survey another portion of this huge sedge meadow and marsh, and we would attempt to convene at the prearranged place and time. So we reached the point where we agreed to split up. Joan drops me off, goes paddling off into the mist, and disappears from view. It's 40 degrees, it's uncomfortable, and my shoes, Chuck Taylor high tops, and socks are already soaked. I take three steps and immediately fall face first into a pool. I'm soaked from head to toe. Did I mention that it's 40 degrees? So that's suboptimal, I think. Well, at least I'm tired. Maybe the discomfort will keep me awake and thinking about other things real hard so I don't have to dwell on the miserable conditions I've chosen to work under in this chapter of my life. So I'm taking breeding bird survey points all along a compass line that's semi-randomized, a pretty good, soundly designed survey. I'm amazed at how many second-year male redstarts there are out there in the alder and even in stands of small tamarack. It's second-year male redstarts galore, scores of them. I go on for a while, and I come to a channel shrouded in swirling mist. I see a figure that looks vaguely human. At first, I'm kind of startled because who the hell's going to be out here in the middle of the night? It's probably 5 in the morning by then, maybe 5:30, but it's dark, misty, cold, and windy. So I see this human figure. He's bent over. And he can't be harvesting rice because you don't harvest rice in June. But he's in a rice bed, looking down at the rice, doing something and never looking up at me. I decide to try and get closer to see who I'm seeing out here, and the point comes where I'm probably within 30 feet of this individual who is separated from me by this deep channel of moving water. I can clearly see him, an Ojibwe, still bent over and intent on doing something. I can see facial features, high cheekbones, straight black hair, and clothes a lumberjack might have worn 100 years ago, heavy plaid shirt and baggy slacks. Then what I don't expect actually happens. All of a sudden he starts receding. He just vaporized. Really eerie. I'm not frightened, but think, what am I seeing here? I'm beyond the point of being highly functional. I'd fallen into really cold water, and I'm probably not terribly astute or otherwise functional. I go on automatic pilot and somehow end up about where I said I was going to be. And after a bit, Joan comes paddling up, probably between 7 and 8. A short time later, botanist Jim Meeker and Emmett Ujevich pull up in a John boat with a small outboard so we can do some vegetation sampling a mile or two farther on, around Honest John Lake near Lake Superior. We spend the day out there, but I don't tell anyone about the incident with the phantom Ojibwe in the rice beds because I thought I must have been hallucinating. Maybe I was, or maybe that's literally what happened. But why that vision in that place? Although it seemed appropriate, it did seem like a time warpage of some sort. Like this individual belonged there and had always been there but wasn't quite corporeal. Was it just hypothermia? I looked semi-normal in retrospect. And then there's another story of Eric's. This is a short anecdote. Occasionally, you bump into someone who you feel is a kindred spirit, even in the middle of nowhere. I ran into ornithologist Mike Mossman in Florence County. We'd both been in the field, the Barrens, for several days straight. We had both been doing various kinds of biological survey work in the three big barrens and bracken grassland areas out there on either side of the Pine River, so we conspired to explore the possibilities of collaborating, enabling us to cover more ground. But we also decided to have a real dinner. And there are not a lot of options in Florence County, but one or both of us remembered an Italian restaurant in Florence that was pretty good. So we're in this dimly lit Italian supper club, and the waitress is bringing us more and more drinks, and we're waiting for a couple of pizzas. Then I notice that our tablecloth appears to be animated, which in fact turns out to be the case. Now, in the northeastern Wisconsin barrens and bracken grasslands are one of the state's tick hotspots. Mike and I are shedding ticks like crazy. There are scores of the fearsome beasts, wood ticks fortunately, and they're crawling all over us and everything around us. I start to see people at nearby tables looking sideways at us. I feel this movement on my head, and I'm looking at these eight-legged vermin crawling all over our table. I see that the arrival of our pizzas is imminent. I'm looking around, and there's a nice jar of red pepper flakes. In a dimly lit room, those flakes look like lot like ticks, but I want to deal with this dangerous animal at large problem before dinner, not afterwards, when I would have to wonder what it was I was ingesting. So I stab one with my buck knife, and it becomes like a parlor game. Did you ever see the Polish flick Knife in the Water? There's an amazing scene with a knife that was reprised in the spooky film Aliens by the android. It's kind of remarkable, and here in the Italian Supper Club, it almost goes like that. One of those days when my hand-eye coordination is good and I'm locked in on the task at hand, I'm just slicing the things up left and right. I see the waitress staring at us as she walks by, and she starts laughing. She knew what was happening, and she says, "Good, good, keep it up, don't stop." So short story long, eventually the problem seems to be at a manageable level, and our pizzas arrive, and we lived happily ever after to talk about it. I'm not sure I've been back to Florence County since then. I guess I have, and of course, as always, it was worth it. I'd like to talk more about the State Natural Areas Program. Many of the places we visit with readings from a field are in state natural areas, so I think it's interesting to know about the history. We have quite a unique history here in Wisconsin. I'm reading from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources website about the State Natural Areas Program. State Natural Areas protect outstanding examples of Wisconsin's native landscape of natural communities, significant geological formations, and archaeological sites, encompassing 406,000 acres on lands owned by the state and its many partners, including land trusts, local and county governments, and private citizens. Wisconsin's natural areas are valuable for research and educational use, the preservation of genetic and biological diversity, and for providing benchmarks for determining the impact of use on managed lands. They also provide some of the last refuges for rare plants and animals. And a little bit of history. Prior to intensive European settlement in the 1830s, Wisconsin's landscape was a mosaic of more than 75 unique types of natural communities, ranging from prairies and oak savannas in the south to pine forests and boggy wetlands in the north. Together, these ecosystems harbored the full complement of our state's rich diversity of plant and animal species. Over the decades, the quality and extent of those natural communities were extremely reduced by land use changes, agricultural and logging practices, and by the ecological impact of altered natural disturbance regimes, such as fire and flooding, white-tailed deer herbivory, the spread of non-native invasive plant species, and climate change. Today, the last remaining vestiges of Wisconsin's native landscape that have escaped extensive alteration or that have substantially recovered from disturbance over time are called natural areas. We owe much to Wisconsin's early conservationists of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, including Aldo Leopold, botanist Norman Fassett, and Albert Fuller, and plant ecologist John Curtis, who recognized the importance of natural areas and the consequences of their loss. Through their advocacy, the legislature created the State Board for the Preservation of Scientific Areas in 1951 as the first state-sponsored natural area program in the nation. That first board evolved into today's State Natural Areas Program. The process to establish a state natural area begins with the evaluation of a site identified through field inventories conducted by DNR ecologists. Assessments take into account a site's overall ecological quality and diversity, extent of past disturbance, long-term viability, context within the greater landscape, and rarity of features on local and global scales. Sites are considered for potential SNA designation in one or more of the following categories: outstanding natural community, critical habitat for rare species of plants or animals, ecological benchmark reference area, significant geological or archaeological feature, and exceptional site for natural area research and education. And I'd like to recommend a state natural area that's near us in Crawford County, northwestern Crawford County, called the Rush Creek State Natural Area. I'm sure many of you have been there, but if you haven't discovered it, it's along the Mississippi River, and a good access point is along Rush Creek Road, about a mile east of the river. There's a parking lot, and you cross over the road and enter through a very narrow little gate and walk in and follow the path up the valley, up to the ridge, and you can move west along that path and get to a beautiful overlook and a beautiful goat prairie. And along the way, you'll walk through oak forest that is managed by occasional prescribed burns. That is quite an accomplishment to get up there, and it's a wonderful feeling to see the view of the river from up there. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.